What's going on? You are listening to the Nerd News Network right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. Today is Friday, May 15th, 2015. Happy Victoria Day weekend if you happen to be Canadian. And yes, I'm in the studio recording. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. And you know what? It's been a hell of a week, guys. Let me tell you. But we've had a lot of good content out on the site. We talked with the people from Fantasy Grounds, and there could be some cool stuff brewing there as well. Don't want to jinx it by saying too much. We also had, I think we've just had a pretty good week. Me and Andrew talked Avengers Age of Ultron, or Avengers Age of Roebuck. I gotta say, doing that graphic was a particular joy. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking to, we're going to be interviewing someone from a new subscription service I recently had a chance to check out, and that's Meowbox. You guys know I'm a huge cat person, especially with Dr. Wily, which, small update, he's doing remarkably well, has not had a seizure in the last 2 months. We have to pill him twice a day, but he's in good spirits. He's most often looking for cuddles and love, so he's a very cuddly cat, as he's always been. So we're gonna talk to her about that subscription service. We're also gonna talk about the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 as they found their Bebop. We're gonna see what Nick Fury himself is gonna be starring in, a remake of something I'm actually kind of excited about. A veteran voice actor has left The Simpsons, which is gonna change Springfield forever. We're also gonna talk some science on you about what's happening down under in the Antarctic and how it could possibly affect things. Finally, we're also going to be talking about, the biggest question that there is. Not, is there more milk in the fridge, but is there life after death? A new scientific study might actually have an answer for that. Now, before I go any further, this week has been one of those times where I watch a lot of YouTube, right? Because it's a good way for me to wake up in the morning. It's also a good way for me just to kind of see what's happening in the world overnight. And recently, for some reason, I have been getting just bombarded with ads, because I watch a lot of my content on my Xbox One, because it's just convenient. And there are two motherfuckers I gotta call out. I cannot stand these people. Ty Lopez. That's a name you probably don't recognize, but if you've heard, hi, this is my new Lamborghini, it's a lot of fun to drive up here in the Hollywood Hills because I'm a stuck-up asshole, that guy. And then there's another guy, this Chinese, I guess he's a bodybuilder or some fitness dude named Mike Chang. You know this asswipe from the most recent commercial, which is 5 fucking minutes of him going on about milk is evil. But last year, he had a commercial where he's like, hey, I bet you can't get those two girls' phone numbers. Oh, yeah? And then he randomly takes off his fucking shirt. Okay, so here's my plan. And I want you people to help me make this a fucking reality. My plan is to kidnap them both in the dead of night, blindfold them, drug them, put them in a steel pit surrounded by fire, fucking alligators, and snipers. Have them beat the shit out of each other. Two men enter. One man leaves. It's basically Thunderdome. And you can never get beyond it. And the winner gets banished from YouTube and basically all media forever. But they get to keep their life. Alternatively, those two can team up and I get to name my two champions. I'm choosing Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey. Jesus Christ, I can't stand these motherfuckers. Now that I'm done that rant, let's begin the news I was planning on doing yesterday before things kind of blew up in my face. So, according to Deadline, actor Gary Anthony Williams, this guy's been in stuff like The Boondocks, he's Uncle Ruckus, and he was also on Malcolm in the Middle, he's going to be playing Bebop in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, he's supposed to start out, I think, as like a street punk or whatever, and he'll get mutated into the Warthog over the course of the movie, supposedly. I'm actually not opposed to this. I think that's actually pretty good casting. I mean, this cast already has Tyler Perry as Baxter Stockman. Not bad. Brian T's the new Shredder. Stephen Amell is the new Casey Jones. That's the dude from Arrow. And there's also been supposedly Judith Hogue. I think the original April O'Neil was sighted on set this past week. So that's pretty kick-ass. I am really looking forward to this. I want to know who they're gonna cast as, like, Rocksteady. I want some big bodybuilder type, like some big goon looking. I want some big goon looking motherfucker. You know what? I want Brock Lesnar as Rocksteady. I think that actually would be kind of funny, actually. Or if they do him like the Ninja Turtles one, I don't know, maybe make him like a completely CG creature and have, like, I don't know, Dolph Lundgren voice him or something. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think that's bad. So we're going to have Uncle Ruckus fighting Arrow and Johnny Knoxville as the Jackass. I don't know. I don't think that's half bad casting. So Ninja Turtles 2, I think, comes out next year. Next June, which means they clearly want to believe in it. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. So this is a fairly new piece of news. I only found out about this remake the other day. Simon West, this is the guy who made Con Air, which is fucking awesome. He also directed Lara Croft Tomb Raider, did The General's Daughter. He directed an episode of Human Target, which was a very cool TV show. And he also directed The Expendables 2. Well, he's remaking The Blob, which is itself been was remade in 1988, I want to say, with Shawnee Smith, and it is one of the best horror remakes ever done, hands down. Go check it out. I think it's on Crackle, I want to say, with Kevin Dillon. Anyway, they roped Nick Fury into this. So yeah, he's the first cast member to get signed up. He's going to be playing a scientist in the movie. I'm guessing he'll be like the other black guy from the 1988 Blob, the scientist military general dude who eventually tries to capture and tries to kill this thing. But what they're going to say, what director Simon West has says, the Blob itself will be more sophisticated, more along the lines of Alien and Predator and things like that, much more science-based, the way Jurassic Park made you believe you could bring back dinosaurs with a bit of DNA from a mosquito. This will be much more explained on where the Blob comes from and how it works. It'll be a much more sophisticated creature because it is a monster movie rather than a horror movie in that sense. So I'm guessing they're going to maybe make it like a giant amoeba and maybe it rapidly evolves. That might be my guess to it. Is this movie necessary to be remade? You know what? I'm curious to see what he's going to do with it if they're taking a more hard science approach as opposed to the 80s, which was straight up monster movie, which was fucking fantastic. Like I said, one of my all-time favorite movies. Maybe I'll do a commentary on that with Scott. I'm not sure whether we've done a commentary for that movie or not. But yeah, it was utterly fantastic. The original from the 60s, or 50s rather. It's okay. It's worth seeing just to see how the different things kind of play out. I want to see what they're going to do with the movie theater scene, whether they'll recreate that one. I would love to see homages to the 1988 version as well. Maybe the battle in the streets with the fucking Zamboni or the ice cream truck or whatever the hell it was. So that might be half-ass interesting. And hey, anybody who directed the Rick Astley music video Never Gonna Give You Up, I'll trust you. So, big news this week, if you haven't heard, The Simpsons lost Ned Flanders, Mr. Burns, Principal Skinner, Waylon Smithers, Lenny, and countless others. Harry Shearer, who's worked on the show since the Tracy Ullman days, has left. Basically, what happened is, it's a lot of issues with back-end and merchandising rights. And basically, from James L. Brooks' lawyer, the show will go on. Harry will not be a part of it. We wish him the best. So that's shit. I don't even know how to describe that. In fact, it was actually kind of funny. There was an episode in season 10 where they actually make a joke about this. They're like, you know what? They don't pay animation actors crap. They can recast the roles and no one will ever notice. And then Flanders walks by and it's obviously a completely different dude. So I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with it. Now, they've said they're not going to kill any of the characters off. The show just got renewed for two more seasons, and there's been quite a discussion going on my Facebook about it. It's been the longest-running TV show, only outdone by Gunsmoke, which ran for, like, 1955 to 1975 or something ridiculous like that. It's just become a part of Sunday Night Fox, 8 o'clock. It's just become Reflex. The show has, frankly, sucked for the last, I don't know, million years. It hasn't been good since the 90s, I think. I mean, there's been a few good episodes here and there, but someone else brought up another interesting point on my Facebook. How many times do you hear people quote the show post-2000? Not too many. Now, there have been some really cool, memorable couch gags. There was one last year where they had Don Hertzfeld do the intro, and I think that was for the Family Guy Simpsons crossover, which was, you know, all right. But yeah, the only one I really liked was that, because it was really fucking out there. And there was, and I feel terrible admitting this, they did an intro with Lisa Simpson doing Kesha's, I guess it was not TikTok or, I don't know, some Kesha song. I really liked that intro because I thought it was actually kind of clever. The couch gags have almost consistently been really good, but outside of that, I don't know. So, yeah. There you have it, folks. We're going to lose Harry Shearer, and that's a fucking tragedy. Now, they saying they're hoping he's going to come back because the show's in pre-production right now. I doubt it. Honestly, let these last two seasons be the last and just let it go. Although, once again, referring back to the cornucopia of stupid that is my Facebook, there, I posted something today. And it made me really kind of think about this, how The Simpsons technically had a series finale a couple of years ago. That's right, hear me out. If you go back to, let me see, I want to say, I'm just trying, the episode was called Holidays of Futures Past. And this is back in 2001, when the show had not reached a good point. At that point, they were like 495 episodes in. And it had this was written as a potential series finale, just in case things went to shit. And they even had a cameo by Matt Groening appeared in the show. And it happened again at Christmas time, which was the show's pilot, which was called Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire. But yeah, it sounds really cool. It was penned by J. Stewart Burns, and, it sounds really interesting. Like, it's basically the show flash forwards 30 years. You see Bart divorced, but he's got two kids. Lisa's some successful businesswoman. Maggie leads a band. They unfreeze Grandpa, who was gonna die of some terminal disease, but now they've got a cure for it. And it's like this generational thing. And everybody comes together, and it's good. It's good, and it's basically things are where they should be, and it's like all generations of The Simpsons together. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I love The Simpsons. I really do. In fact, we should probably do a Simpsons topic show at some point on Twig. But I don't know. I think losing an actor like that is going to be a huge punch in the head to the series, and I think it's tragic. Okay. So, science, climate change, global warming, whatever you want to call it, we know things are happening. Whether you believe in it or not, I'd love to see you argue with fact. The Antarctic's Larsen B ice shelf, this thing has existed for like over 10,000 years at least. There's a good chance it's likely going to crumble away before the end of the decade, according to a NASA study. Now, I'm actually going to read part of this just so you know exactly what I'm talking about here. And this comes from JPL researcher, I gotta find his name, Klazandar. I don't know whether that's a full name or what. Anyway, he says, although it's fascinating scientifically, it's bad news for our planet. Ice shelves are the gatekeepers for glaciers flowing from Antarctica toward the ocean. Without them, glacial ice enters the ocean faster and accelerates the pace of global sea level rise. When Larsen B partially collapsed in 2009, the tributary glaciers that remained appeared more or less unaffected, and hence assumed to be buttressed sufficiently by the remnant ice shelf. Klausendorg and his colleagues report in the latest issue of Earth and Planetary Science that they found the Larsen B remnant in surprisingly poor shape. This remnant, it's about 625 square miles, or about 1,600 square kilometers in area, and about 640 feet thick at its thickest point. Now, this thing melting isn't going to drastically raise sea levels, but it's going to change things a little bit in just how we perceive climate change. It's kind of interesting in the fact that now we can see this happening. Maybe we can prevent it, or at least adapt to it. Because, like I said, I'm a big believer in climate change. I think the term global warming has gotten a bit of a bad rap. It's got an unfortunate name associated with it now because it's not totally encompassing of what it is. Climate change is a better description as opposed to global warming. Because, like, it was colder this year. Global warming's not real. I'm like, motherfucker, you don't know what you're talking about. But there it is, folks. We're watching what's happening. And they say likely this is because of human interaction. And, you know, but we'll see what happens. Because what the ice shelf is, it's basically, it's ice and all that stuff on top of what's essentially beach. It's actually not on, like, trying to think, how would I even begin to describe this? Excuse me, I'm just thinking here. Ha. Huh. Okay, it's basically ice that's, this ice sheet is sitting on top of beach and ocean. So, there's actually, a comment on the IO9 article that kind of, it kind of sums this up. So I'm actually going to link the article just so you guys can read it, because they explain a lot better than I can. But it's not going to drastically affect ocean levels. That's the big thing to take away from this. But it's still indicative of climate change is happening on our planet. And I'd be very curious to see what that's going to do to weather patterns, particularly if it's going to be gone in the next decade. Because that'll be something to see. I really hope we get that on camera when the big collapse happens, because I know we've seen icebergs break off in Antarctica before, and it looks spectacular. So, moving on to my last story before we hit our interview with Olivia from Meowbox, because they have 9 lives and we don't. But anyway, so the first hint of life after death has been found according to a scientific study. Now, this comes out of Southampton University, has found evidence that awareness can continue for at least several minutes after clinical death, which was previously thought impossible. So what happened? So scientists from the University of Southampton spent 4 years looking at more than 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrests at 15 hospitals in the U.S., the U.K., and Austria. And they found more than 40% of people who survived described some kind of awareness during the time that they were clinically dead before their hearts were restarted. And this is something that I'm actually going to read directly from the article. One man recalled leaving his body entirely and watching his resuscitation from the corner of the room. Despite being unconscious and dead for 3 minutes, the 57-year-old social worker from Southampton recounted the actions of the nursing staff in detail and described the sounds of the machine. One of the researchers, Dr. Sam Parnia, says, "We know the brain can't function when the heart has stopped beating. But in this case, consciousness awareness appears to have continued for up to 3 minutes into the period when the heart wasn't beating, even though the brain typically shuts down within 20 to 30 seconds after the heart has stopped. The man described everything that happened in the room. But importantly, he heard 2 beeps from a machine that makes a noise at 3-minute intervals. So how long we could... So we could time... how long the experience lasted for. He seemed very credible, and everything that he said had happened to him actually happened." So I think that's amazing. Although many couldn't recall specific details, some themes did emerge. One in five said they felt an unusual sense of peacefulness, while nearly a third said time slowed down or sped up. Some recalled seeing a bright light, a golden flash, or the sun shining. Others recounted fears of drowning or being dragged through deep water. 13% said they felt separated from their bodies, and the same number had said their senses had been heightened. Dr. Parnia believes many more people may have experiences where they are close to death, but drugs and sedatives used in the process of resuscitation may stop them from remembering. Estimates have suggested that millions of people have vivid experiences in relation to death, but the scientific evidence has so far been ambiguous at best. Many people have assumed that these were hallucinations or illusions, but they do seem to correspond to actual events. And a higher proportion of people may have vivid death experiences, but do not recall them due to the efforts of brain injury or set of drugs or memory circuits. Either way, these experiences warrant further investigation. I think that's amazing, if this is in fact true. I'm not afraid to admit it. Death is actually one of my biggest fears in life. And it's not so much the fact that my life is going to end, no. It's the loss of consciousness. Being able to know that I am gone. To know the fact that, you know, I want to be able to acknowledge the fact that I'm gone. I just don't want to be like, and that's it. That terrifies me. That will wake me up out of a dead sleep. But, you see what I did there?
Just the fact that, who knows, man?
I mean, I don't think we're ever going to scientifically accurately prove the soul or something, but I don't know, man. If we start seeing angels and stuff, I think we're going to have a conversation. So anyway, to end this holiday edition of the Nerd News Network on a very awesome note, very happy, very cuddly kitty note, we're going to be talking to Olivia from Meowbox. And what is this? And it's a subscription service for your kitties that I think you're going to want to check out. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Nerd News Network, and as you guys have noticed, recently I've been taking a look at some interesting people from the world of the subscription crate services. I mean, we've talked to people from NerdBlock before, we should have somebody on from Caffeine Rebel in a little bit, and we talked with the guys over at Comic Bento. Well, this most recent one, as you guys know, I love my cats. I got Dr. Wily, I've got Ayla, I've got Logan, and I found this one just by just typing in random subscription services, and this one definitely hits close to home. I'm talking with Olivia Canlis, and she is from Meowbox, and as you guys can guess by that awesome title, it's a little thing dedicated to kitties. So without any further ado, let's welcome Olivia to the show.
Hi,
I am excited to talk to you because I never would have thought about doing a subscription service for pets, although the idea seems rather obvious. Thank you for doing this wonderful service for my cats. My cats have not put away the squeaking mouse ever since.
Oh, I'm sorry, but not sorry.
So, I guess, what is the origin story of Meowbox?
Well, basically, to make a long story short, I noticed that there were subscription boxes out there for dogs and people, and there was not a single one dedicated just for cats. So, and me being a cat lover, I knew that, if someone was going to do it, why not me?
So when you start to put together these boxes, I mean, like, how do you decide what goes into each box each month?
There is a huge assortment of goodies out there made for cats. It's tough to kind of know that because at the pet store, you look and you see all kinds of things for dogs and other animals, and a very small section of things for cats. So when we go to trade shows, they happen a few times a year. We scour the entire show for all the cat things. So we have quite a huge assortment of things to choose from. And I have three cats myself, so they kind of let me know too what they like, and they all have different tastes. So one thing might work for one cat and another might like another item. So they kind of tell us too what's cool and what's hot and what's not.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed with Meowbox, and I think this is really cool, it seems like you guys work with shelters and rescues, right?
Yes, we do. we have a program that we started a couple of months ago called One Box Can. So basically, with every mailbox that's purchased, we donate a can of food to a shelter cat.
Oh, so how successful has that program been so far?
Oh, it's been amazing. So we when we started Mailbox, we definitely volunteered our time and funds to shelters, but we wanted a way for our audience to see exactly where they were contributing. So we came up with One Box Can where when you receive your mailbox, we also send you an individual code that you can log in on our website, and you can see exactly which shelter your can of cat food is going to. So you can basically track it from when we order it, ship it, and when it's received to the shelter. So we wanted a way for people to clearly see exactly where they were helping, as opposed to just saying, oh, we help out at these shelters and we donate to this shelter. We wanted to show you.
And I'm looking at some of the shelters that, that you guys currently work with. You work with several in Canada and several in the U.S. So you guys are all over the place, from
yeah.
Toronto to Denver to California and all the way out in Langley, B.C. So I guess my next question for you is, what are some of the brands that Meowbox has worked with in the past?
Oh, we work with so many. So for some of the treat companies, first of all, for anything that is edible in a box, we source it from either U.S. or Canada. And so some of the treat companies, we've worked with Wagger's Treats, Feel Good Treats, Royal Canin for food. And for the toys, we've worked with, we've often worked with big companies and small companies. We love goods that are handmade. One of the Etsy shops we work with is called Crazy About Catnip. They do handmade catnip toys. Shannon Ellis Designs does bow ties for cats. We've also worked with bigger companies like R2P Pet, who does like toys that have like batteries in them that do crazy things that light up and squeak.
So I guess as my final question to you, Olivia, what are some of the funny stories that have come from working with Meowbox over the course of its creation? Like, have you ever had like your cats maybe get into the stuff that's going to be shipped out that goes all over the floor?
Is
up the stories?
Well, at the beginning, when we started the business, we started at home, and having cats and boxes of toys, and especially catnip. We had to devise ways of like separating when we were working and where the cats could be. But before we figured that out, we would be working and stuffing the boxes and turn our back and notice that there was, let's say, one of the cats in the box of catnip mites, just buried in it all the way, just completely covered in them. Or there'd be treats, we'd notice them and they'd be claw marks or teeth marks like in the packaging, and we're like, I guess you guys just claim those as your own. So that definitely happened a few times.
Well, I gotta say, I love it when my cats get into my stuff and they like to chase around packing peanuts. In fact, when we first got the Meowbox, I actually posted to your Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And we had Logan, which is the white cat, and Dr. Wily, which is the little black kitten. They were definitely enamored with the box, and they took out the little bug, and they chased him around the house, little squeaky toy, and this bone that sounds like it's got crunchy plastic inside of it.
Yeah.
And my cats love that one.
And,
they utterly love this. And I got to say, as a person who now will hopefully be signing up on a more consistent basis, this is awesome. So how much does this service cost per month?
So we have three different plans. You can either sign up for it once a month. So you just pay monthly, so no commitment, and it's $32.95. If you sign up for 3 months, you pay 3 months up front, and it ends up being $27.95 a month. And then, of course, the best plan is the six-month plan. You pay upfront for it, and it ends up being $22.95. And shipping is always included.
That's fantastic. And approximately when do boxes go out each month?
We ship out on the 15th of each month or the next soonest business day.
All right, then. Well, Olivia, I definitely want to thank you for your time, and I want you to hang on the line for just a second.
Sure. sure.
All right, guys. Well, that was my interview with Olivia from Meowbox. And like I said, if it's Dr. Wily endorsed, you should probably check it out. So, guys, I'm going to throw things back to the Nerd News Weekend, because after that, I'm out of here for the long weekend. So we'll be back right after this. Well, thank you, Olivia, for spending a little bit of time with us. I think we're actually going to be doing some work with these guys. So be watching the sidebar of the website for a link to get a little bit off if you start a new subscription with them. So you should start hearing something in the next week or so regarding that. So keep it locked right here. So anyway, guys, I am going to take off on my holiday weekend. So have a safe and happy Victoria Day weekend. I don't know whether it's Memorial Day in the States. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. So either way, have a good weekend. Have a safe weekend. And I will talk to you guys next week right here on This Week in Geek. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard. I'll catch you guys again next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh, freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@ThisWeekInGeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.